You're listening to Irish Radio Candidate Home and Abroad, and I'm sitting here with Joe Henry, and Joe's from Nova Scotia, but not originally from Nova Scotia. He took a circuitous route to get there, and we are at Your Roots Are Showing, and I'm not talking about my hair or his hair. I'm talking about a music convention conference that is in Belfast in early 2026. Joe, thanks a million for taking a few minutes to come by and have a chat. I mentioned there you have a circuitous route. First of all, you're a musician.
Yeah, what are my sins?
Yeah, and how would you describe your music?
I kind of describe it a lot like Grandma's quilt. You know, okay. Grandma used to take a bunch of different scraps of fabric and sew them together.
Yep.
It's like that. Everything that I grew up with, everything that's ever inspired me, and I've just been an absolute, I've been in love with music my whole life. So it's every genre, every discipline. There's a little bit of everything in there.
Now, I'm trying to figure out what part of Nova Scotia that accent comes from.
nobody in Nova Scotia sounds like me. It's a good, healthy mix, a lot like my music. It's a good, healthy mix of everywhere that I've had the pleasure to spend enough time. But I was born in Canada, in Manitoba.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where in Manitoba?
I was born in Winnipeg.
Okay.
Yeah,
Winterpeg.
Yeah, St. James.
Yeah, so you wanted to get it. Yeah, you got out in the month when it's not cold.
Yeah. Yeah, when my feet unfroze from the ground.
Yeah.
For that week.
Right. At what age were when you left Manitoba?
Oh, I was young. I don't even remember the move.
Right.
I was very young,
Yeah, young enough that you didn't acquire a flat Canadian accent. So
yeah.
So you obviously moved south.
Eventually I did a lot of traveling, but I was always with my mother or my father, depending on who they'd split up. And I'd be traveling around with my dad somewhere, traveling around with my mom somewhere.
Okay.
And then I left home at a young age and decided to travel around on my own.
Okay.
It's a thing. My mother, while I was growing up, thought that there was something wrong with me.
Okay.
Because I would mimic everything. Like even the sound of a vacuum cleaner. Whenever she turned the vacuum cleaner on, I'd find the weird harmonies with it and the distress of coming out of the note a little bit. And, still to this day, every time I hear a vacuum cleaner turn on, it's like in the background, I can hear the opening to that show MASH.
Yes.
I watched that all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Suicide is Painless.
Yeah.
Also remnants of Van Morrison, and like my mother would love to clean to Van Morrison and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
So it's all those feelings come back. But because I would do that when I was younger, it's almost a plague now. If I live somewhere too long, it'll start to seep in. If I, especially because I've always been somebody who wants to be around the locals.
Right.
Like when I'm touring, I always want to stay in a bed and breakfast if I can, because I want to get to know the place that I'm in. You know, in case I don't get to talk to a lot of the locals, at least I get to talk to somebody who loved it enough to live there and start a business.
Right.
Because of that, if I stay in a place for a while, I'll only be with locals.
Yeah.
I don't really like to, like, going to some resort somewhere just to see people from down the street. Doesn't make sense to me. So I'll steep myself in local culture, and if it's too long, I get a little bit of something with me in my voice when I leave.
So you're obviously not long enough yet in Nova Scotia.
No, not yet.
So tell me a bit about your musical career and when you started off and how you started and where it got to.
Yeah, well, music has always been a huge part of me. Luckily, I grew up with a very musical family from my father's side. And everybody was fiddle players and acoustic and stuff, but mainly like Métis fiddle music, and of course country, straight across country, Webb Pierce and Ray Price and all of that
great
stuff. And my father was was a country and western troubadour for sure.
Okay.
Award-winning, wonderful voice. He was a wonderful man. Very, very talented.
Right.
So I grew up just steeped in it. Like that was the ground I grew out of, was music. And so I would always be singing along with something, or playing the spoons. I really loved playing the spoons. And I always thought I'd be a percussionist, actually. And then I got plagued with songwriting. But it has been since I was a child, really, since I was little. And then I did it to pay for food while I lived on the street for more of my life than not. Feed my dog and myself, so I'd play in front of everything, pubs.
Right, right. And where was this?
Everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere. Once I left home, I was like the wind.
And when you say you would play, what instrument were you playing then?
Guitar. Okay. Because it was the one thing that was just all-encompassing that I could actually carry with me.
Yeah. So when did you pick up your first guitar then?
Oh, my first guitar, it would have been when I was really little, messing around with my dad's or one of my uncles. But my first ever first guitar was a guitar that my father gave me. It was a Strat knockoff called a Hondo by Fame. It was a Japanese Stratocaster knockoff. And I played my fingers raw on that thing. That was the first guitar. My father gave it to me. He only really showed me a couple chords and said, "You'll figure it out." And that's what I did. I never went to school, never did. I joined in on any kind of jam that I could. Didn't matter to me what kind of music they were playing. And I just watched what they did.
Yeah.
And I tried to mimic it by the sound I was hearing. And still to this day, I could play a very complicated piece of something and have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah. So do you remember what age you were when you got that guitar?
Oh, no. I maybe 9 or 8, of my very own.
So you mentioned then you spent time living on the street and using music as a means of survival.
Yes.
How long were you, that period of your life, how long did that stretch?
Oh, I'm from, I'd say, a minimum of 15 years.
In one sense, I know I say this in the greatest compassion and respect and that I can, but I know that that provided you with fertile ground for music.
Yeah, it was a necessary evil, as they call it.
Yeah.
It was really...
You were at university without knowing it.
Yes, definitely, truly. I was learning so much, and now that I look back on everything, it was very necessary.
Yeah.
And whether you're a religious person, a spiritual person, believe in energy, anything like that, I believe that we're all only given what we can handle. And I think that it all happens for a reason, because now I have these lessons, you know, and I have something inside of me that's a little piece of everybody that I've gotten to meet. And I've gotten to meet everybody from sleeping under a bridge to in multi-million-dollar homes. You know, I've hung out with super, super rich folks and people with absolutely nothing. You know,
in times of the Beatles song, "In Times of Trouble," how do you maintain hope?
Oh, I think for me, hope is in the people that are passing by. It's in a sunrise and a sunset. Hope is a bird that stops a little longer right beside you on a pole to look at you and let you know everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I find it's in the care that you see around you that regardless of how you feel, days still go on. They still happen. You know, so it's not the end of the world because you're feeling upset. You just have to look at it a different way, because I could go outside of this building right now and walk around here, and I can find somebody to make me happy if I'm feeling down, to make me realize maybe sometimes it's just realizing that what I have I shouldn't take for granted, because there's always somebody who might have a different struggle, or there's also always somebody out there that might have so much joy that they have enough to give away.
So, I guess one of the lessons that must come out of that struggle is how you have no choice but to live within a day.
Yes, right in the moment, yeah. All the time, 100%.
And consequently, to be able then subsequently to convey that in your creative side, I have no doubt that that message and that experience would be then reflected in your compositions.
Very, very much so. Yes, unless I'm writing something that is strictly like a prompt for sync placement on a show or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
All of my music has that very well encompassed in it. It's a symbol of hope. I like to try and be like a lighthouse in a storm if I can for people that might need it. Because I believe at some point in my life there was a decision made that I might be an example or an aid.
Okay.
And that just seems to be what my life has become. I'm an example or an aid for those who might need it because I've probably been through it.
We're living in a time where it doesn't matter whether you're in Ottawa or Halifax or Toronto, Vancouver or any Dublin, Belfast, where there's an awful lot of people who more than previously are being hooked on fentanyl and other what are highly addictive, highly dangerous, fatal drugs.
Yes.
In the time you spent, you must have seen horror. It's worse than it is probably was.
Oh, definitely. When I was taken by that, when I had addiction in my life, it was at a time where it was in dark alleys. Mm-hmm. It was away from sight.
Mm-hmm.
And now that poison has become so profound in our culture, in our cities, that it's right there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You find needles on playgrounds, mm-hmm. and it's a symptom, and it's something coming to head. It's showing. It's civil unrest. It's a symptom of something that is showing us that what we're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We're going the wrong way about things, and we need to actually start fixing it,
mm-hmm.
instead of talking about it on platforms, mm-hmm. and doing as little as we possibly can, sharing some picture on some social media app.
Mm-hmm.
Pretending that we're doing something, because we're
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that we're doing something is when we go out and we help each other,
mm-hmm.
No matter what it is. And that's with everything. That's with addiction. That's with mental health. That's with racial and sexual and all of these different differences that we have as these wonderful, complex human beings. We're all so different, but so much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And until it's an environment that's created that we can all just coexist and understand that we're here to help each other out, not to pick a side, not to use anger, not to decide that, like, I'm this today, so everybody who's not that today is wrong. We need to get out of that feeling and understand that truly, regardless of what we think, we are all exactly the same.
When did you move to Canada back? When did you come back?
That would have been around 2010, 2011.
And was it an easy or a difficult journey to get to come back to Canada for you?
Well, everything was relatively smooth.
I'm not talking about the paperwork. I mean, just the...
Oh, there was no paperwork involved.
Well, being a Canadian, there wouldn't be. I mean, just, you know, even to come to a point where you say, you know, I'm out of here, or I'm moving on, and where I'm going is Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Oh, that was, yeah, that was long after. The first place I ended up off of the streets, actually, was in Montreal because of a wonderful couple, Brad and Manon. And they found me in front of a grocery store playing music, and they invited me to stay at the house, and they said, it's a punk house, so it's a lot of squatters and stuff. And I said, I'm just thankful for it, you know. So they helped me get off of the streets, and that's why Montreal became, I was just traveling, like I didn't know what I was doing tomorrow.
Okay.
And it just happened, and I'm a firm believer of when life presents a path that maybe you should go down a little bit.
Right.
And that's what led to everything that led to me being here today.
Right.
I was just talking with some wonderful friends yesterday from Champaign Weather. Wonderful people, James and I. And it's even in the darkest time, You eventually realize it was so necessary. Like I was telling my children the other day that they wouldn't exist and my wife and I wouldn't have gotten together if my father didn't die on my birthday in 2013.
Okay.
Because that was a catalyst that made me move from Montreal back to where the land of my people is, in the Red River Valley.
Okay.
And everything rolled from there, and then I was living in the Red River Valley.
Okay.
And Shelby, my wife, and I decided we were going to get together after knowing each other for 15 years.
Okay.
I'd pass through, and the wildest things happened. And then all of a sudden, we decided we were living somewhere else. And where was that somewhere else? And then everything ended up pointing to Nova Scotia, even though neither of us had been there. I had no job lined up. We had no house lined up. I had to finish rebuilding a house that I had to completely gut and rebuild, wiring, plumbing, everything.
Okay.
And we went out there following hope. Right. And it's now led me to Belfast, Ireland.
And in leading you to Belfast, you have a tour going on at the moment.
Yes.
So while you're here in Belfast, the tour was had been prearranged, so you'd already established connections and you'd already established a route that you're able to travel. How did that come about?
Oh, it was a wild occurrence. I did on PEI, Prince Edward Island in Canada, in the Maritimes. I did something called Contact East with the Atlantic Presenters Association. And it's kind of like this, but a little bit more curated, smaller, and the showcases are all lined up. So all of the delegates get to go to all of them.
Okay.
And they don't have to pick and choose.
Okay.
And there was a wonderful man who came up to me later on one evening. We were doing this function at an arcade. It was like an adult arcade. I was playing pool, and a wonderful man named Amir Bell came up from Wales, and he said he was there to book Theater X.
Okay.
And that's what he does. And he said, but I'm going to propose you to my theaters. And that's what got me started here, was Amir, keeping in contact. And we've set up some shows with them. That's NEAT. It's called NEAT. I can't remember what it's an acronym for. Arts and Theater, I think, something. I'm not exactly certain. I'd have to look it up. But we're going to do some great shows.
Right.
And then he linked me up with another person from Arts Alive.
Okay.
So they put on some more shows. So I'll be doing some shows with them. And it's taken me all through Aberdeen and in England and on the Welsh border, and I'm getting so close to where my mother's side of the family is from. I can feel it.
Right.
I don't get to make it all the way there this time.
And that is from where?
Stornoway.
Yes, sorry, you mentioned that.
Yeah. So I'd really love to get there someday, somehow. But at least I'm going to be back on the soil that my blood recognizes.
Fantastic. You know? So then out of this conference, which you mentioned, like that, the one in PEI, that this different than this, but yet this is the same concept. So you get the opportunity to perform in front of what are festival directors and booking agents and all that.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding the experience here in Belfast?
Really second to none. It's been a wonderful time. I've met so many wonderful people here, great musicians that we're going to have a good long-standing friendship and hopefully collaborate together. And I've met some wonderful souls who have given themselves to the industry and make it possible for folks like myself to figure out how to pay the mortgage.
Right.
When it seems that some days it feels like all you are is a songwriter.
Right.
You know, I get that feeling sometimes that I'm cursed. I know how to do many, many things.
Yep.
I've picked up a lot of skills over the years, but the only thing that I know 100% that I can do, be fulfilled with, and never look at the clock, and with ease, like it's something that I feel not only that I'm made to do, but that I'm a professional at, you know. And I've just been lucky enough by the grace of whatever it is to have that inside of me. And forever that's been a problem for artists, you know. Like, it feels like, what else can I do in this world if this is all I can do? And how do you survive that way? And then add 5 kids to the situation and a mortgage. And you need industry folks that pull for us.
We're going to share a little piece of your music.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to share?
I would say the best thing is a track called Real Things, because it really is a lot of what we're talking about here, and
right.
a lot of what has got me to this point in my life. Just stepping back and realizing, it starts out with a line that maybe a smile could mean something more, and maybe the right thing's waiting on the other side of that door, you know. And it goes on to explain a little bit. Step back and look at it and understand, not only could it always be worse, but it could always be so much better.
Joe Henry, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Austin. It's a real pleasure.